Einen wunderschönen guten Morgen. Ihr hört Insert Moin, ich bin der Micha und ich freue mich, dass ihr eingeschaltet habt zu diesem wunderbaren Interview mit Olivia de Rivière. Das ist im Rahmen der Dying Light The Beast Preview auf der Gamescom entstanden und ich habe erst überlegt, ob ich das an das Gespräch von Timon dranhänge, das ihr hier auch nochmal separat hört. Aber ich dachte, weil Olivia auch über viele andere Aspekte redet und auch allgemein über seine Arbeit als Komponist und Sounddesigner, die jetzt nicht unbedingt was mit Dying Light zu tun haben, habe ich gedacht, ja, vielleicht sollten wir dieses Gespräch nochmal als was Einzelnes betrachten, es auskoppeln. Es wurde ja auch separat aufgenommen an einem ganz anderen Tag. Und irgendwie wollte ich auch ihn als Person nochmal ein bisschen hervorheben. Ich hoffe nämlich, dass Leute dieses Interview finden, die Bock haben, mehr über seine Arbeit zu erfahren. Weil ich persönlich bin zum Beispiel ein großer Fan von der Arbeit von Olivia de Rivière. So, jetzt werdet ihr euch fragen, wer ist denn das? Ja, das ist auf jeden Fall der Komponist von Dying Light. Wie nicht zu übersehen. Aber er hat zum Beispiel auch die Musik zu den beiden Plague Tale-Spielen gemacht. Die kennt ihr vielleicht noch. Das sind diese Sachen, diese Spiele, die im Mittelalter gespielt haben, wo ihr die beiden Kinder gespielt habt, die etwas größere Schwester und den kleinen Bruder, wo es durch das Mittelalter geht, durch so eine sehr, sehr krasse Darstellung der Pest mit diesen fetten Ratten, die durch die Gegend laufen. Die Ratten, die bewegen sich so ein bisschen so wie bei World War Z, falls euch erinnert, wie dieser Haufen an, fast schon wie eine Flüssigkeit, bewegen die sich durch die Straßen. Und das fand ich, war ein krasser Horrorspiel. Ja, und die Musik davon ist zum Beispiel von ihm geschrieben worden, von Olivia. Und dann geht es noch ein bisschen weiter zurück. Remember Me zum Beispiel ist ein Spiel, das er gemacht hat. Ist das von Capcom. Das erste Spiel von Don't Not, die dann später mit Life is Strange weitergezogen sind. Und dieses Spiel, darum ging es um Erinnerungen. Das spielte in so einer futuristischen Version von Paris. Und man muss dort Erinnerungen remixen, also man muss Erinnerungen so hin und her schieben auf einem Tape und so. Und deshalb gab es dann zum Beispiel im Soundtrack solche Ideen, wie dass der orchestrale Soundtrack komplett zerstückelt war und dass der so ein bisschen klang auch wie Fragmente und Erinnerungsfragmente und so weiter und so fort. Und das macht die Arbeit von Olivia so besonders, dass er sich für jedes Spiel etwas überlegt, was zu diesem Spiel passt, anstatt umgekehrt seinen Sound auf die Spiele zu drücken. Und das ist etwas, was wir sehen wie sehr, sehr viel bei Filmkomponisten. Nicht bei allen. Es gibt auch welche, die dann für diesen Film wirklich tolle Sachen machen. Aber manchmal hörst du dann die Musik und es ist dann irgendwie sehr, sehr ähnlich. Weil diese Komponistin dann eben ihren selben Signature-Stil dann so fahren. Und das ist auch cool und so. Es ist auch nicht verboten oder sowas. Aber Olivia arbeitet da so ein bisschen anders und versucht, hat natürlich schon so seinen eigenen Stil. Man merkt an seinen Kompositionen auf jeden Fall immer, das ist eine und dieselbe Person, die das geschrieben hat. Aber die Art und Weise, wie das vom Sounddesign behandelt wird, also wie die Musik durch verschiedene Techniken zum Beispiel durchgeht, wie jetzt zum Beispiel Remember Me oder wie sie behandelt wird, das ist jedes Mal ein bisschen anders. Ein Spiel, das ich sehr, sehr gut finde. Und wenn ihr mal im Insert Moin Archiv guckt, haben wir darüber auch gesprochen, nämlich ich zusammen. Ich habe das mit dem Daniel damals gemacht, mit Daniel Raumer, habe ich Get Even zum Beispiel besprochen. Und das ist ein Spiel von Area 51, glaube ich, heißen die. Nee, Farm 51. Man muss an Area 51 denken. Es ist aber die Farm 51. Und das ist ein heute, glaube ich, relativ unbekanntes Spiel, das aber trotzdem sehr, sehr starken Eindruck bei mir hinterlassen hat, weil es eine sehr, sehr bewegende, richtig, richtig krasse Geschichte über Erinnerungen und auch Erinnerungsfragmente erzählt und tief in den Verstand einer Person eintaucht, die wirklich Schwierigkeiten hat, sich noch an wichtige Aspekte in seinem, in ihrem Leben tatsächlich zu erinnern. Und das ist ein krasses Spiel, ein krasser Genre-Mix auch. Man weiß lange Zeit nicht, in welche Richtung das geht. Riesenempfehlung, ich finde das Spiel hervorragend. Das ist bis heute Gedächtnis geblieben. Und das ist auch zum Beispiel eine Arbeit von Olivia de Rivière. Und da kann ich mich an sehr, sehr geile Techniken erinnern, wo dann zum Beispiel die Musik und auch der Sound dann sehr dynamisch war. Also je nachdem, wo man sich befand im Raum und was man im Spiel gemacht hat, hat es auch anders geklungen und die Musik hat dann zum Beispiel auch andere Wendungen und so weiter gemacht. Das war richtig cool. Und dann geht es noch weit zurück zu Obscure zum Beispiel, Obscure 1 und 2. Das sind Survival-Horror-Spiele. das war klar. Wann kommen die Horror-Spiele, wenn Michael über irgendwas redet und schwärmt? Und das sind Teenie-Horror-Spiele gewesen. Also im Prinzip Teenie-Slasher. Das war so zu dieser Hochzeit, als in der Videothek gerade noch so die ganzen Sachen von so Scream und sowas, also diese postmodernen Horrorfilme, Teenie-Slasher-Filme. Das kam quasi raus. Das war ein sehr, sehr cooles Ding, was man auch damals im Koop spielen konnte und war ein Spiel von Hydra Vision. Die gab es nicht mehr so lange. Die haben dann später nämlich dann noch eine PS2-Version von Alone in the Dark gemacht. Und da hat Olivia auch wiederum dran gearbeitet. Also nicht an der PS2-Version, sondern an dem größeren, an diesen 2005 war das, Remake, was nicht ganz so gelungen war und kein großer kommerzieller Erfolg war, aber der Chor, der dahinter lief, also ich glaube, das war ein bulgarischer Chor, der war für die damalige Zeit ziemlich einzigartig. Ihr müsst euch vorstellen, Setting ist irgendwie New York und Central Park und so weiter und dann ballert da dieser Chor aus allen Rohren. Das war schon ziemlich geil. Also es hat ziemlich Eindruck bei mir hinterlassen. Naja, und dieser Mann, den ich schon lange zuhöre, der hat jetzt einfach mal Zeit für ein Interview und das hat mich riesig gefreut. Und deshalb wollte ich das jetzt unbedingt hier auch nochmal separat als einzelne Folge raushauen. Nicht, dass es irgendwie so verwoben wird. Ja, das sind dann technisch gesehen 2 Folgen zu Dying Light, The Beast. Aber ey, es ist halt auch Oliver de Rivière, das ist mir egal. also gibt es jetzt einfach ein separates Interview mit ihm. Jo, das ist so als kleine Einführung. Also es ist ungefähr, ihr habt bestimmt schon mal Kontakt mit dem gehabt, auf musikalische Art und Weise. Das ist bestimmt das eine oder andere Spiel dabei. Wie gesagt, Dying Light 2, das ist halt auch von ihm versetzt worden. Wenn ihr das Gefühl hattet, okay, dieses Parcours, das ist schon ziemlich geil akustisch umgesetzt, auch von der Musik her und so, dann solltet ihr dieses Gespräch jetzt nicht verpassen, weil der erklärt ein bisschen mehr, wie das Ganze entstanden ist und ja, wie es dazu gekommen ist und was die Philosophie dahinter ist. Jo, und wir reden auch so ein bisschen, was wird in Zukunft passieren mit dynamischer Musik und so weiter. Warum machen das nicht so viele Leute? Warum wird das von vielen Leuten nicht so richtig ernst genommen? Und so weiter und so fort. Also natürlich gehen wir wieder zurück auf Dying Light, aber im Endeffekt reden wir auch allgemein über ein paar Aspekte, die sehr allgemeingültig sind und deswegen hat das Interview auch außerhalb, selbst wenn euch Dying Light überhaupt gar nicht interessiert, durchaus eine gewisse, so ein Alleinstellungsmerkmal, das ich hoffe, dass man hier herauskristallisieren kann. Jo, jetzt habe ich wieder ein bisschen zu viel geredet für die Einleitung. Ich will gar nicht so viel labern. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß bei dem Gespräch und Empfehlung ist, geht auf den Bandcamp-Account von Olivier de Rivière. Der sämtliche Musik könnt ihr da runterladen. Unter anderem die auch wirklich tolle Musik von allem. Ich wollte jetzt einen einzelnen Titel rausheben, die sind aber alle gut. Die sind, also mir hat aber auch Plague Tale, die, vielleicht kann man die als Einstieg empfehlen. Die ist nicht so krass geremixed und hat jetzt nicht so viele technische Sachen. Bei den anderen ist dann auch viel Synthesizer auch mit drin, was ich persönlich super geil finde. Aber wenn ihr was zum Einstieg sucht, dann hört vielleicht erstmal da rein. Aber insgesamt wirklich tolle Arbeit und ich hoffe halt eben, dass wir in Zukunft noch sehr viel mehr von ihm hören. Jo, ja, dann wünsche ich euch viel Spaß mit dem Gespräch und bis zum nächsten Mal. Tschüssi.
Yeah, Olivia, thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for taking part in this exciting interview about music and games.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we just established that I basically listened to every game you made, you worked on, you created on since the beginning, like Obscure and so on, and so I'm familiar with your work. And I'm super excited about hearing yesterday, everybody was mentioning very casually, yeah, Olivia is also making the soundtrack. I'm like, what? This Olivia, who made the soundtrack of Dying Light 2? And they already mentioned that we'll be very different and stuff like this, and maybe you can give me a small introduction to yourself and also at the same time, what do you have to do with Dying Light anyway?
Okay, so I'm Olivier de Rivière, and I'm composer, music designer, and I've been doing games for my life. I've been making music on computers, and so I happen to end up on making games because I'm a gamer. I love games, and I ended up on Dying Light 2, by the way, not 1.
Yeah.
It was in 2018, 2019. I've met with creative director Peza, And we discussed, and we fell in love, sort of, because he was mentioning a lot of things that resonated with me, and I was exposing something, you know, in answering his questions, and it happened, and we made the game, and it was a very demanding game, in a sense that it's a very, at least on the music part, but I know on the whole game as well, but it's a very deep game in terms of systems, in terms of offering tons of possibilities for players. And so it was a long ride of 3 years. And and now I'm back 2 years after the release of Dying Light 2 to be working. I've worked a little bit on the Tower Raid lately, which is a new feature in Dying Light 2. Mm-hmm. And now we're on talking about Dying Light the Beast.
Yes. The soundtrack of Dying Light 2 has this really cool feel to the parkour rhythm, I think. So this is how I would describe it. When I played it, you have this rumming sound and really feels like you're running. So it's basically really good for workout if you're listening to
the soundtrack. How it happened, it was because Peza, the creative director, was mentioning to me that he wanted to push players to parkour on top of the buildings, you know, on rooftops. And we were thinking, okay, what can make them be happy about parkouring, except the fact that it's fun to parkour, but to add something to this, to have like a sort of a reward to engage them more. And we were like, okay, let's make music only on top of the park, of the building, and let's start the music soft because the players might parkour a little bit, but the more they're doing, you know, great stuff, stunts, jumps, the bigger the music. And then Peza was mentioning the state of parkour flow, like you're just focusing on the next move and you're into this tunnel of like, wow. And this is when the music gets to its biggest, let's say, evolution. And it worked because players said on the feedback we got that they don't want to stop parkouring because they reach out to this level of you know, intensity and they don't want to let it go.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, we also had to be very careful because if the players would stop, we needed to make sure that everything would stop accordingly to, you know, letting them hear, you know, there is zombie here, there is whatever, you know, like threats around, and also not to be tiring for them. So that was like a big challenge, but in the end, it was very appreciated by the players, which is a big relief for me.
but it worked because you're one of the few composers, I might say, that really use the full extensive toolset you have available in games. And this is something not everybody is doing. This is why I'm really fond of your work, because you do vertical programming and horizontal programming. You do layering and stuff like this. And I'm listening to this and I'm like, okay, this is actually pretty cool and it makes sense. So the more intense something gets, the more stuff gets added to it and so on. And what do you think, why is it so difficult for others to get to this level? Is this a point where you have to get very early into production? Is this the thing where people don't discuss this?
Well, that's the thing with people like Techland. They offered me, and this is why I really was happy to be working with them. It's because they offered me the opportunity to, you know, research, you know, R&D. And that's why the 3 years. And it's because you want, as a composer, not to be a composer at first. You want to understand the gameplay. You want to understand the intentions. You want to understand, and also you want to wait for the gameplay to be ready enough to be like, okay, this is how it's going to work. So all of that, you know, makes me, as a gamer, you know, like, there is the sparkling in my tummy. You know, I'm like, oh, wow, we can do something that I've never played myself. Yeah. And it's very exciting. And the thing is, why not much people do this? It's because, yeah, they tend to make a game, you know, like, it takes them, I don't know, 3 months, 6 months, I don't know, and then they move on, and me, it's 3 years. So it's a commitment. It's a commitment for the players mostly, you know, for me as well, because I want to offer, you know, something to them. But in the end, yeah, I've been advocating for this for, I don't know, 25 years now almost. And and the industry is difficult, you know, to sort of like, it's a practice that will come more often, hopefully. But I hope I will still be alive when it's going to be the norm.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing I'm hoping for.
But the thing is, you get very early in production. You also make some sound design in it. You really have to a part of the creative decisions, basically, how the music is built up in game, right?
Yeah, so the thing is, you need to be sort of a geek or nerd whatsoever about tools and understanding the tools that you have at hands. So we had these tools called Wise, for instance, which is like open to anybody. Actually, you can download this and have it on your own computer right now. And this tool allows you to do whatever you want with sound and music. So the thing is not like you need to first master the tool, but mastering the tool doesn't allow you to do everything because you need to have the mindset of, okay, I need to understand the game, to understand how I can write music with this sort of like approach of gameplay and execute this in the system accordingly with the parameters that are in the game. So it's a very, let's say, teamwork environment. It's not just me here. It's me with tons of programmers, designers, talking, exchanging, and, you know, building up all of that. So it takes a lot of time.
So you mentioned WWISE, the middleware. So the tools you have available, do you also work with technical artists to create your own solutions for sound?
Yeah, so you can basically create, you know, like your own solution if you want to. Mm-hmm. But WISE has been out for about maybe 20 years maybe now, I don't know. And it's about 50 people working on this tool. Yeah. And if you want to start now to create something that is as efficient as this, good for you. You know, I'll be like super excited for you, but I'll stay with WISE on my own.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, WISE. So WISE is really cool for layering and stuff. This is
It's not about layering or whatsoever. All these sort of, once again, perspectives of like horizontal, vertical, all of that, you know, is a very limited way of looking at, you know, how we can approach music in games.
Okay.
You should, you should not look at this way because it's basically limiting the thinking. So once again, you need to master the tool, you know, in order to sort of like, and you know how it is. You learn the rules, you assimilate the rules, and then you break the rules. And that's the thing, is like, once you understand the tool, you can go around everything and offer something that sort of the thing was not meant for.
Yeah.
And that's what we do with WISE in Dying Light 2 and so many other games that I've been doing.
That's pretty cool, because I was wondering, when thinking about these classical things like horizontal, vertical and stuff like this, this traditional thinking about music, is that this also feels like a little bit limiting for games, right? So especially when you think linearly. Is when you look at these tools, do these spark ideas in your head? You're like, okay, actually, you can try this because we have the availability in these tools.
Well, look, in the parkour, so you go and the music is getting bigger. So you think it's maybe layering, it's maybe, you know, horizontal, vertical, whatever.
Yeah.
But then you jump over, you know, a street and there is a gap.
Yeah.
And now the music is doing like, and then boom, you get back to your feet, okay?
Yeah.
That's not music per se, it's an effect, you know, in real time on the music that will provoke this sort of like, you know, because what's happening in real time, we add some reverb, we push the equalization, we remove the bass, and we're like, ooh, it feels like, okay, and it's growing, and then when you get back, everything goes back to normal, and you have this feeling of, okay, I'm back. So that's why music for games is not just like, okay, it's music.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's, we're in games, and games happen in real time, and we can do so much in real time.
Yeah. Well, the so effects is the first thing that comes to mind, but I think also when it comes to real time sound, basically, you can also modulate stuff in real time.
Well, definitely. So I happen to have made different games previously where we did like work with MIDI, for instance. So MIDI is this sort of like a very old protocol. Mm-hmm. But what it is, it means that we can create a real-time music playing.
Yeah.
You know, it's no more like something we record, but it's happening in real time as we're playing. And so we can work around with the sound. We can, you know, screw everything up. I mean, everything is in real time, like tempo, for instance.
Yeah.
You can change the tempo anytime.
Yeah,
and this is the future of music in games, by the way.
I think so, because even when you look at different engines, for example, they built in solutions for this. So everybody's looking at WWISE and like, okay, how can we do an old version of this? For example, the Meta Sound comes to mind from Unreal, which basically works like a synthesizer. You can have a source of audio and modulate it the way you want, which is pretty cool. And I think people are realizing, okay, we actually have now the technology, the hardware power, and also the artists behind it, but it slowly starts coming. So it's just not as many people as I would like, to be honest, but...
Metasounds is an amazing... This is the future.
Yeah.
We have to acknowledge this. This is the future, because basically it's generated by the computer.
Yeah,
it's no more... Okay, so what they're doing at Epic is really looking forward, you know. The thing is, right now, the issue we're having with the current process of production in games is like, Metasounds are, as amazing they are, don't provide an environment that is easy enough for people like maybe me, but for other people to collaborate easily on stuff. So as much as you can dig in, you know, blueprints and create, I mean, I've seen things that you people wouldn't believe. But in Metasounds. But the thing is, myself, I worked a little bit in this, and I was like, okay, it's like working in Reactor, if you know this, or, you know, Mac DSP, or all of these things, MSP. It's very deep and very powerful. And I'm waiting, and I think they're working on that. An interface that is sort of like more user-friendly, that is using the background that we're seeing there.
So I also tried it a little bit, and it reminded me of synthesizing and
re-synthesizers. Exactly.
So like one of our Eurorack systems, and I was like, okay, this is pretty interesting. And I'm not a programming guy at all, right? So I have no idea, so I have a hard time getting my mind, wrapping my mind around blueprint. But this is, suddenly I understood it. I was like, okay, this is adding effects, and this is self-modulating stuff, and so on. And this kind of makes sense, but you're right, it's still too complicated for artists, right? So they need to be kind of versed into...
It's the beginning, and as for many beginnings in the technology, you know, only the engineers and the crazy sound designers that spend tons of time, which is like the most fun time ever for us. But now we need to look at the face of reality, and we have to ship a game, and we're like, okay, let's so far, you know, stay in WISE. And, you know, maybe a few years from now, we'll all be in Metasounds if we're using Epic.
If something in this way. It's great to see that someone is trying to tackle these things. But when it comes to, this is interesting, because when looking at your stuff in general, like in music, you always try to experiment with different soundscapes. So I remember earlier games like Remember Me, for example, where we really remixed the orchestral sound, which is a bold thing to do, but I really like this. Fits the topic. And also when going to Dying Light, for example, you always have these, you have these familiar sounds of classical instruments, but at the same time, Dying Light 2 is a great example. There is this bouncing sound, for example, I think it's a synthesizer, which feels like heels bouncing off the ground, like feet coming from, it's hard to describe, but electric sound basically. And this, how do you come to these ideas?
Well, that's the thing, is like people think that I have great ideas, but I'm stealing from creative directors.
Okay.
Because they're just talking and they talk and they talk and they talk. And when they speak, you know, it's like The Beast, for instance.
Yeah.
It's like I'm listening to Pavel, he's the creative director, and he's talking to me and he's like, I want this to be more mature. I want this to be, you know, more about, you know, the revenge, you know, rage, you know, about something that is. But in the meantime, it's still a kind of train, and we want him to sort of like get back to his senses as we go. So, you know, when you hear all of this, you already know, you know, you're like, okay, I'm not going to do music that goes like melodic, like, oh yeah, it's great. you don't want to go big epic. You want to go visceral, like brutal, and something that feels like almost, you know, cold.
Yeah.
You know, something that is very cold. But at some point, so a little bit spoiling here, at some point with the music, I mean, you will have emotion kicking in, you know, because we want to realize that. And once again, all of this, of course, is translated into music by me, but this is from the creative director.
Yeah.
So it was the same for Dying Light 2. Beza was like, you know, it's the city is broken, the people are broken, the main character is broken, and all of this. And I was like, broken.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if, because we wanted to go with an orchestra to express, you know, different palettes. And I said, we need to break the orchestra. And so the way they play and the way, you know, they bounce and things is very, you know, not natural. It's a little broken. So this is how I function. And Remember Me was the same. The, you know, it was like, oh, this is the old Paris in the futuristic Paris, and you can digitize organic forms, memories, and you can, you know, manipulate them and glitch them.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm going to record an orchestra and express this sort of like romantic Paris.
Yeah.
I'm going to then digitize it and I'm going to, you know, glitch it with effects. It's not my idea. I mean, it's my idea to the way I translate this. Of course, you know, I'm bringing something on the table, but that's why I don't speak music with creative directors ever.
Yeah,
I speak about their intentions, their game, I translate, but we never speak music.
This makes so much sense because looking at other stuff, it's something Get Even, for example. Get Even is also about memories, which also fits kind of the remember me thing, but you did something very different also with there's the grandfather's clock in the background that really ticks, and this is about time and getting back in time and stuff like stuff and memories is what comes to mind for me at least. And you have this very emotional side, and also when you listen to the music of Dying Light and so on, there's this very emotional part.
Yes.
Mostly with cellos and strings and stuff. It works. It works. But then at the same time, this really abstract sounding electronic sound, this really harsh, nightmarish sound you mix in together. And I think this is a beautiful soundscape.
Well, thank
Scary
you.
Scary and beautiful at the same time.
Well, that's great. And that's the challenge also for the bees, because we want to install this into something a little bit fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's like, so we're boring a little bit. I don't know if you heard, but in the trailer you have like the motive, like da 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 da, da.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit like, you know, distorted, ominous. Yes, exactly. It's out of tune and things. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to get that because the Kai Crane we have now is not the same. He went through, you know,
a
lot of, a lot on his own.
Yeah.
So now we need to acknowledge this is Kai Crane, but it's a different guy. And the thing is, it exactly like there is no string there.
Yeah.
There's no space for string. You know, we don't want that. And we want to, let's say, exploit the previous ideas in a sense like we don't want to lose them and betray the legacy as much as we don't want to make it like this is the same person. And so we have to navigate. I mean, I have to navigate. And this is why the music will be different in many ways, borrowing a little bit from Dying Light 1, but getting you into a new realm.
Yeah.
Which is not like as emotional, you know, as Dying Light 2 was, for instance, when, you know, Aiden meets with his sister and, you know, Alberto dies and I'm spoiling everything for everybody. but the thing is, we want here, you know, to be more about somebody that, let's say, has an animal within himself.
Yeah.
And that at the end will maybe make peace, you know, with himself.
Yeah, yesterday, when we talked about this, we had the comparison to Oldboy, for example, the movie.
Yeah.
And also, again, the general idea that you are locked away for, I think, a decade, right? 10 years and things happening outside and so on. I think I got the impression that he doesn't really know how the world works now, because in 10 years, a lot of things have changed so much. Obviously, people have died during this time, and things in the city have changed and the world around him. Also, the behavior of the freaks have changed and so on. So a lot of different stuff. So he really does not. And I feel like yesterday during the presentation, I had the impression, okay, this feels so unsafe, right? So the music is floating, lingering in the background. Like, you don't really know what's happening. Was this?
Yeah, the thing is, the way the music you can experience, I mean, number one, it was difficult to listen because of the noise and, you know, headphones and things. But the thing is, the approach for music in this one, in this game, and for audio overall is like, it's going to be, you know, Kai Crane was a military sort of trained, you know, person. So he's well-trained, he's a killer, he's been through hell already, you know. But now he's being tortured, in prison, you know, and he got free.
Yeah.
So you can't, I mean, you can't expect somebody like this that is, you know, fulfilled with revenge, like I want revenge, you know, to feel other than just coldness. I have a mission, you know, and it doesn't matter, actually. Nothing matters except the mission.
Yeah.
You know, and the mission is to get revenge.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, the environment and everything, you know, for him, I guess, is just an obstacle for his own revenge. And so the music will be there to sometimes be like a little bit spooky whatsoever, because we want players to feel, because they're not Kai Crane players, so we need to provoke this sort of like, ooh, this is scary, you know, but Kai Crane is not very scary. Kai Crane sort of like will sort of, when he fights, compared to Aiden, for instance. Yeah. Aiden, when he was fighting, was like, yeah, 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 like this, okay, yeah, efforts. Yeah, yeah. Kankren is not making much efforts, but when he hits someone, he's like, you don't do this to me, you know? Yeah, yeah, that's yeah. the way he is.
A lot of okay. anger. Yeah.
Exactly. He's, yeah. he's, you know, very much on the anger side. And he's, there is a catharsis when he's fighting, you know, so,
yeah, yeah.
yes. And so there is a sort of a, the pleasure of the players when they fight, because that's the pleasure of the players. It's fun,
yeah,
you know,
right. yeah.
it's sort of like the translation of the release of the rage for Kai.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we want to have that. We want to be like, okay, when you're fighting, and this is why when you fight, the music goes like just one or two notes with the guitar, the boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Cold as hell, but... You know, like,
yeah.
don't F with me.
Push him forward.
Yes, and this is what we want to convey, yeah. at least at the beginning, you know, and for an amount of time. And we don't want the music to be very illustrative of anything else but the inner feeling of Kyle.
Yeah.
And this is how we're going to use the music for on this game. So much less music, much more about the environment, mm. being more realistic, immersive, scary.
Yeah, yeah.
And now when you unleash the rage, then... you're like having this sort of like, I don't want to say happiness, but enjoyment of letting go. You know, like, okay, this is my time now.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
And you go. So that's what we want to do with music.
But this is something I really sense. There are situations, obviously, where the mood gets a bit lifted, like in a safe room, for mm-hmm. example.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, we have this fight and you go through the window, finishing the zombies and then go to sleep and then... the music, the safe room sound.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Resident Evil.
Resident Evil. yeah. Since Resident Evil, everything has to... but it makes sense. Every horror game does this, and this is kind of a staple. And you have your own version, which is really cool. And this is something really interesting. I wonder if you also were working on this. So I realized yesterday that the environment change also changes the soundscape and also mm-hmm. the atmosphere a lot.
Yes.
And I don't know, it's hard to hear over the headphones, but this is at least the thing I realized, is that, for example, the how the air sounds, how the wind sounds, how the weather sounds, how the stuff feels totally different to the stuff inside. Because right in the beginning, when you're in the village and you're looking forward, it feels like vast and very open.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment you enter through a door inside of a building, the atmosphere gets really shut in, claustrophobic, like it sounds very different. So is this also something you work
That's
on?
Good you notice this, because yeah. that's what we want to do, is that we want to, once again, have a sense of immersion that is bigger than in Dying Light 2. Dying Light 2 is, let's say, on a side, you know, like it's more, let's say, it's lighter.
Yeah.
Okay. We went on the road of having this sort of like empowerment of Aiden, this young guy that is getting bigger, better, you know, all of this. This is not the tone here. The
yeah.
tone is more like, okay, I'm here to kill somebody and I will.
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. And the thing is, we want then also to be like, as I said to you, to be aware of everything. So when you enter a room, just as an example, technical example, previously the reverb would be like at this level,
mm-hmm.
and so when you would step in, it would be like, but now we made it like much louder, so it's like, and you feel like, ooh, this
environment. It's going too far
yes,
up.
You,
right?
you can
yeah.
hear, like, you're like, okay, so yeah. somebody else can hear that.
Oh yes, of course, makes sense.
So we're trying to put like a sense of like, okay,
yeah.
you're making noise now.
Yeah.
Careful, and Kyle is heavier than Aiden.
Yeah.
Aiden, well, if you listen, you know, back to back, you're like, oh, Aiden is light.
Yeah.
But Kyle is heavy, you know?
How did you approach forests? So forests are a big part, and how about the sounds in the forest?
Well, the forest, it's, number one, it depends if it's by day or by night.
Yeah.
Because everything's different in the game, depending on the hour.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about day, for instance, okay, mm-hmm. it depends on, let's say, the narration, the mission you're in. And we have, I don't want to spoil anything, but we have manners of telling the story a little
yeah.
bit there, okay? But if it's by night, now we're off. This is like, you know, the playground of, you know, the volatiles and everything.
Yeah.
And we want players to be very aware. And now we want, like, instead of fulfilling the environment with tons of sounds, it's much less, a
yeah.
little bit of things. And you can pinpoint, like, there is one there.
Oh, yeah.
There is
yeah.
one over there. And you can play. I mean, this is much better to play. But also, it makes sense for Kai, because he needs to be super focused you know, in order to make his way. So basically that's the approach, you know, for, let's say, audio overall, to give a sense of contrast between day, night, forest, because in the city, of course, it's different. You will have some background, like sort of, how do you call this, stingers, you know, things like this.
How do you feel about the liberty games give you in games in in composition in general? So I got the impression that a lot of people that are learning about music and learning composing in the classical route tend to look at film scores, for example, and this is very traditional, very classical, and film scores, let's be honest, they very often sound the same in some places. So there's cool stuff, but yeah, you have your opinions too.
Well, up to 20, I don't know, 25, 26, 28 maybe, you know, we had like a different style, different voices, different, you know. Now, since the 2010 and up to now, there are some, of course, but, you know, it's not as different as it was before. You know, in my youth, it was more like, you know, I don't know, John Williams, Ennio Morricone, Alan Silvestri, Vangelis. You know, totally different approaches, totally different, you know, sound, Danny Elfman. You know, you could pinpoint and be like, this is very different now. Everybody seems to sound the same. I don't want to blame anyone. It's just a system. I blame the system.
It's the system. This is what I'm asking. Because, of course, there are composers who try something different. Hans Zimmer or something, who's doing the space stuff with Dune or so, and is trying stuff. And other less famous composers who work with synthesizers and so on. But I feel like in games, you have way more... way for experimentation.
Why do you think I'm doing games?
This is what I wanted to ask. And is this something that really drew you to games? And you're like, basically the question is, are you happy where you are right now with the decision to work on games? And
but I think games, and it's not just for music. I think overall, making games nowadays is the best place for a creative person. It's the best place. Because number one, only literature, if you look around, okay, at all the medium right now, I think only literature still beat and miles away, like millions of miles away, the game proposition offering of worlds, you know, journey. I mean, look at the games we have and the worlds that are created in games. I mean, this is like beyond anything. Like every game is new, like this new world, this new thing. You know, this is, and it can be a puzzle game, it can be a racing game, it can be a horror game. I mean, this is amazing what we have in video games, and we have maybe too many games nowadays, you know, because I cannot play all of them and I'm frustrated. But at least for creative, it's the best place to be. And as for me, you know, the thing is, I think you need to respect the vision. You know, you need to understand the, you know, the creative director's mind. You need to understand the gameplay. You need to understand, you know, what's there in order to do, to start doing anything. So before, you know, thinking that you matter, which is never true, it's always being like, okay, the game, what is the game? What's the vision? And as long as you're respectful to this, as long as you understand, you know, and you can talk and of course iterate a little bit and to align, you know, nobody will be like, oh, you should write this, you should do this, you should do that.
Yeah.
Because it's not the way that creative people work. And basically, you know, the most talented people I've been working with would say this, one of them say this to me, because at some point, I said, but do you want to discuss music? Because I'm polite.
Yeah.
And he answered and he was like, I'm not hiring you to tell you what to do.
Okay.
You know, because he knew that I was somebody that would respect, you know, you know, because he was like, I don't want to think about this. You want to think about this, not me. And me, I'm thinking about the game and I'm telling you what's the game. And now you deal with the music. And this is obviously what happens in all the game that I'm working with, is like the relationship is key.
Yeah,
everything else comes from the relationship. If you don't match with the creative director, just say, I'm sorry, you like Justin Bieber, you love the latest, I don't know, like movie that is like, you know, the thousands of the same things. And it's not my thing. It's not that it's wrong. It's not that it's bad. It's just that it's not my thing. And I cannot offer you this. And, you know, we go apart and that's fine. And this is why I'm always like open to be like, I'm maybe not the right candidate and that's fine. But, you know, luckily, it happens that it works.
It really works. And also, you start so early on the production, you're like really getting in there. I think this the results really speak for themselves. So I'm really happy to hear that you are on Dying Like the Beast. And
thank you.
This is, I was very happy when I heard about this yesterday. I was like, okay, yes, he's coming back.
Hopefully you like it.
Oh yeah, this is something. And yeah, I think. Thank you so much for answering some of this question. I feel like you're really passionate about the stuff. And
you have to. If you work in games, if you're not passionate.
Yeah, no chance, right?
Well, not no chance. It's just that it's a different life, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah,
You can't. You need to be professional and deliver on time, whatever the passion. Mm-hmm. But if you're passionate, you know, you will put everything you have into it. And the thing is, games allow you to do this. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I see so many people getting frustrated in the movies and the ads, you know, everywhere. And in games, of course, we have some frustrations here and there. It's not like the perfect world.
Yeah.
But at least, you know, we're all together. And that's the thing, we're all together. It's a teamwork. It's never like just me, just, you know, it's everybody.
Especially on larger teams, you work with so many talented people from all different places, right? So this, I think.
Well, you work with, you know, I'm working with the designers, I'm working with the level designers, I'm working with, you know, audio people, of course, I'm working with, you know, producers, I'm working with sometimes animators. Everybody, and we know each other, and we are, you know, let's just say we're together into this. You can compare this to being a sport team, you know, and competing against something that is abstract, you know, but we're all together, and we need to play along. Because that's the thing, if one of us is failing, either we help, you know, or we fall.
Yeah,
so we need to be all together.
There's one question. This is the question I also asked yesterday in an interview for Dying Light. And this is not music focused, but I need to ask this because it's interesting.
Uh-huh. Okay.
No, don't worry. Since you worked on two zombie games now, you are kind of a zombie expert, a little bit. Not as much as the guys who are from Techland who worked like decades on this, but I need to ask this question too. Zombies are, I think this is a huge genre, there's a lot of people are super fascinated by it, we have seen different versions. And for you as a musician, is there something that fascinates you about zombies and you're like, okay, this is actually cool to write about this kind of world, apocalyptic world, is there something where you get drawn to it? And how would you explain this fascination of zombies in general?
I really don't care about zombies.
This is the perfect answer.
Yeah, I really don't care about them. I care about the people reaction to being with zombies.
Okay, I see.
Yes, because zombies are just dead meat. And the only thing they want is eat you.
Okay.
Which is okay. You understand. You're like, okay, that's a threat. Now, what about the people? And that's what's interesting. That's why, you know, Aiden was interesting. That's why Kyle is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to look at it as the from the perspective of a zombie. What's the perspective of a zombie? There's none.
Nobody knows.
It's a dead meat. So, okay. But how do you navigate through a zombie environment? You know, an environment full of zombies. That's the real question. And it's not just action type or whatsoever. It's how do you feel about this?
Yeah.
You know? And how do you... Survival is, of course, the main thing when we're talking about this. But then what's super interesting is when you go even deeper in the layer of the human being and be like, okay, we all need to survive. Okay, at what cost? Do we betray? Do we protect?
You know,
all of that. And this is what's interesting, you know? And I think for any game, so whatever the genre or the approach, and if there are zombies, it's always about the people.
It's always about the people. Yeah, this makes sense. Looking at your work, it's always about the story and the people behind it, what is happening there. We talked about memories, we talked about time, what does time to people and stuff like this. And I think this really fits. So thinking about this, what does this extreme zombie situation do? Could be something different, but in this case, zombies. What does this doing to people, right?
Well, zombies, you put me into the ocean with a shark. You know, I think the shark is smarter than a zombie. Like, you know, he thinks better than a zombie, and I will be scared as hell.
Yeah.
And the music might be, I mean, I don't even know if the music is from the shark perspective or from the, you know, is it the shark or is it you? You're like, and you know it's coming up, you know?
It works both ways. Because it also has the POV in the movie, right? So it means that it could be, maybe some people don't care about the people.
It's the threat. I think it's the threat. It's not like the personification, but it's the threat.
It's a threat.
So it's abstract, but it's there.
Olivia, it was so nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for the time. Yeah, and thank you for this interview. Thank you.